Hi, I'm Natalie.
I'm Lena.
And I'm Sean. We are three friends who all love film and thought it would be cool to discuss movies from our perspective.
We rate movies in terms of how drunk you need to be to enjoy them.
We call it the Martini Scale.
What's up, ladies?
Hello, hello.
Part two.
Oh my God, how excited.
Back at it. Our first official two-parter.
Well, it's the first official two-parter, I think, that we have actually done over the course of like two different weeks.
Yeah.
So that's fun. How have you guys been? It's been a while.
Good.
It's been a week, actually, yeah. Right? We recorded a week ago, right?
Yeah. Ready to finish chatting about television shows.
Oh my God. Yeah. So much has happened in my television world in the last week. I can't wait to talk about it.
So many
But
things.
I also feel like we did not cover as much as we needed to have covered in that first episode.
No.
But we'll have to keep the banter light.
We're going to keep the banter light, but I have something really important that we need to discuss because
okay.
I sent you guys this tweet earlier and it directly impacts our lives. Variety is reporting that AMC Theaters says that their cinemas are going to open on July 15th and they will not require masks. And I have really strong feelings about this.
Is that before, well, does that, is that counteractive to your state's requirements?
That's a really good question. It's like your
jurisdiction. Ooh, interesting.
Good question. Here's the thing. I think that the answer to that is no. I think that the state like regulation supersedes that. However, what it really comes down to, and it's kind of what you're seeing happening in restaurants and stuff right now, is the enforcement, right? So we can say that it's, you know, mandatory, quote unquote, but unless there's actually people there enforcing it, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm going to be really candid. I don't feel like going to a movie where I'm not safe. And so I feel like that's going to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, because they didn't even say about like seats will be separated. It's just you're opening it like the whole theater or.
No, they did. It's 30% capacity.
Yeah, I was going to say 25. I thought it was 25% capacity.
I read 30% capacity. Every other row is blocked out. You're still encouraged to social distance. So if you find that someone has booked a seat near you, then you should move like to a different part of the theater. It just feels like too much work when I can just watch something in the comfort of my living room right now. Like as much as I hate that, because as we all know, like I personally, and I know you guys do too, like love going to the movies. Like it's one of my favorite experiences, but I just feel like until society is behaving in a more appropriate way, which from what I can see is not happening. I don't know. I'm not going to put myself at risk to sit in a theater for 2 hours.
I mean, hopefully we do have the benefit of living in Los Angeles where I feel like the majority of people are on the same page as us. And I do feel like hopefully when we go into a theater, we will see people with masks on.
So I don't want to burst your bubble, but I was on my run this evening and I wear a mask when I'm out. And there was a man on a scooter. He looked like a deranged Trump supporter is all I'm going to say. No offense to Trump supporters listening. Actually, lots of offense. But he yelled at me and all I heard was the word mask. He didn't have a mask on his scooter, whatever. He was yelling at me something about the mask. And I was like,
yeah, like you kidding me? Have your freedom or something you don't need to wear. I'm sure.
Yeah. And he was like spitting in my face as he's doing it. And I'm like, dude, the thing that annoys me the most about the mask is like, the mask is not for me. The mask is not going to protect me. My mask is to protect you.
Right.
And so I just don't understand why we have such a selfish culture around. Well, I do because it's America and that's what we are. But it's just so strange to me that people don't seem to get that, like, let's just help each other out. Like these are crazy times, dude. Like, let's make the best of it together. You know,
it is very shocking. My gym opened up yesterday. And so I did go and the majority of people were wearing masks inside. If people were like on machines or breathing really heavily, like they weren't wearing masks, but everybody was really diligent about, you know, being separated and, you know, wearing masks when possible. So it's, I don't know. I'm hopeful for the people that do think the same way that we do and want to enjoy and respect the people around us and, you know, be able to start being able to go to restaurants and go to movie theaters and do things like that slowly and safely.
I just feel like until everybody is participating at the same level, there's always going to be a bad egg that spoils it for everybody. And that's, as long as that is a thing, I just personally don't feel comfortable. And
their name is Orange County.
Totally. And like, I could definitely be overreacting, but you know what? I would much rather err on the side of caution than risk my health or risk the health of people that I care about. And so, or even people that I don't care about. I don't think that it's worth the risk, but I guess we'll see what happens over the course of the next few months. And I don't know. I just don't see anything changing. And I think the crazies are going to remain crazy, and it is what it is.
You know, that is very possible. I am curious what it's going to be like in a theater. To me, this isn't as beneficial of a business for studios to be releasing movies in theaters right now if the max capacity you could sell out a theater is 30%. So it's not like this is financially in their best interest to do that. So I think this is going to be a really weird time for this industry, because obviously theaters, AMC in particular, doesn't take kindly to studios releasing on VOD. And, you know, we've talked about AMC kind of cutting off ties with Universal after they did Trolls. So I think this is going to be really interesting to see how studios support the theaters and what movies they're actually going to release during this time. Because it's obviously they're not going to want to release anything massive because they can't sell out a theater. They can't make the money they used to make. It's just not possible. And people aren't going to the movies. So, you know, I think it was like 30% said they can't see themselves going back at all.
Yeah. I think, I would go back when it's safe, like if there's a vaccine or there's some sort of treatment available for people to get this, but until there isn't, we all have to just kind of be, you know, hyper vigilant, I guess. I think the barometer in all this, quite frankly, is going to be Tenet at the end of July. I think depending on how
many people, 'cause that's what the email was like tempting you with, like, enjoy Tenet at AMC on July 15th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the 31st. They're opening the theaters on the 15th, and then that film comes out the 31st. But I think that's really going to test the waters. And if that film, the blockbuster that they're billing it to be, does not do well, then the studios are going to say, fuck it, it's not worth it. We'll release stuff on VOD or whatever. Yeah. Like, I just, all of this content that's supposed to come out over the last 3 months, going on, you know, 5 months by the time we get to the end of July, just seems so strange to me that they haven't given us most of that. We've gotten a few things, but for the most part, like, they've held everything back. And so I don't know. It's a weird time. It's clearly a weird time to be hosting a movie podcast, but
yeah. But at the same time, if you do think about it, is obviously all of these studios, production companies, distributors, they've already invested their money in the production of the film. So they are trying to place the smartest bet to be able to recoup and make additional money on top of that. So this is such an uneasy time that it makes sense that nobody's willing to kind of like see how you do the first go around. And to me, something like that, you can't redo that. Like, it's not, you probably aren't going to get an opportunity to re-release your movie and give it a good old fashioned try again, you know, down 6 months from now if it didn't do well. So I could see why, yeah, they're betting on, you know, a Christopher Nolan movie and audiences knowing that this is something that they like to see in theaters. And will this have legs of being number one in the theater till the end of the year? You know, like, is that how it's going to make its money back? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think too, though, I'm really interested to see more of the VOD numbers, just because I feel like we've kind of gotten a little taste of that. But I would be very curious if they were to release a film like that. I know it won't be Tenet because he's already said that he's not going to do that on VOD, or straight to VOD rather. But I would be really curious to see kind of like a mid-range film, how it performs on VOD. Because if you look at a film like Invisible Man, for example, that had kind of like a half and half experience, right? So you had like most of the movie gross was made, you know, the first 3 weeks that it was in release before all this shut down. But then it's had kind of a second life on video on demand. They held it back for just rentals for a couple months, and then now it's available for sale, and it's grossed like $100 million more than the budget was, right? And so I just feel that like there is a life in that sector, and I'm really curious to see how it unfolds throughout the rest of the year and beyond.
Yeah. I like that you call it VOD.
What do you call it?
VOD.
Oh, what does it spell?
It's video on demand.
I know, but it spells VOD. I don't know.
I know, but I've never heard anybody call it that. I think it's kind of adorable.
Really?
Yeah.
I've always called it that. Okay. Well,
I know you do. I'm always like, oh, should I be calling it that?
I was going to say that.
VOD.
I was going to say that last time. And I was like, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
So speaking of adorable.
You're talking about me?
Obviously.
He's talking about me.
I'm going to, aside from stating the obvious, I want to jump into our episode. Because there's a show that came out this week and it wasn't originally on the agenda, but I have spent the last 10 hours of my life up till 2 a.m. watching it. And so I'm going to have something to say about it. But do we have a martini this week or are we transitioning last week's martini? What are we doing here, Natalie?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same martini.
Okay. So you got really creative.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Have you even posted the martini on social yet?
No, because we're going to post about this when we release this episode too. So it'll be a part twofold. One and two push. It's a twofold push on the social and then the martini will go after that. So.
All right. I like your thinking.
Yeah.
So where are we going to get started today? I feel like I hogged a lot of the last episode, so maybe I'll.
You definitely did.
Okay.
I mean, so like I barely even talked.
Let's I'm gonna, that is absolutely not true.
I feel like when we listen back to the episodes, I will like fast forward and kind of scrub through. And every time it comes back, like somebody starts talking, it's always me talking every time I'm fast forward. I'm like, do I ever shut up?
No, you don't.
I mean, no comments. I have no comments on that.
Okay.
No, it's all of our
show. I feel like we should talk about. We should talk about defending Jacob because we kind of,
yes,
we alluded to that in the episode last week that we were going to talk about it in the episode and we did not. So I feel like we should start with that.
We sure did. Defending Jacob is a crime drama miniseries based on the novel of the same name by William Landy, produced by Apple TV Plus. It tells the story of a family defending. See what I did there. It tells the story of a family dealing with the accusation that their 14-year-old son may be a murderer. The series was created and written by Mark Bomback and directed by Morton, Tildum. Oh, Siri thought I was talking to her. No, Siri. Wasn't for you. Sorry.
Tildum.
Tildum? Why couldn't I say that? It's so weird.
I don't know.
I've only had like half a...
It looks like Tylenol.
Have a cocktail so far. It stars Chris Evans, Michelle Dockery, Jaden Martell, Cherry Jones, who I love, Pablo Schreiber, Betty Gabriel. Schreiber, that too. Betty Gabriel, and do you want to say this one, Natalie?
Sakina Jaffrey.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. I will say that this is, it's one of two shows on Apple TV Plus that I have been not just excited for, but completely enamored by. And I'm so curious to hear what you ladies thought about it.
Lena, why don't you start us off?
I really enjoyed this. Chris Evans, obviously he's my favorite Chris.
Yeah.
And I think he did a great, great job. Like not Captain America. He was just kind of a guy. I think the only, well, I guess I'll say this, even though I want to talk about the show, but I think the only thing is I didn't feel like he and Michelle Dockery fit together as husband and wife.
I did not buy it.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit toward the end, like because I was involved with them. Like, but at the beginning I was like, ooh, these two, she looks way older than him. No offense. I love her. But like, it just didn't fit their chemistry or whatever. I think Jaden was great. I think Jaden's, you know, it's these kid stars again. We compliment them every single time. And it's another compliment. I really enjoyed him. I was thrown like every episode, like, oh my God, did he do it? Did he not do it? Did he do it? I don't know. Now I don't know. Now I know. Now I think so. It was just like a whirlwind. And then the dad, when the dad came in to play, it was like, now there's a whole nother level of stuff.
The Chris Evans character's dad.
Yes. Chris Evans characters. Yes.
The grandfather.
It was just really, really interesting story. I don't know. I love like murder crime shows. So like, it was like perfect for, I really liked it.
Yeah. I have a question. So, cause I felt similar about the Michelle Dockery character, but I found myself asking myself, did I not like them together because I didn't like her character? Because I really did not like her character. And I was actually talking about this story with someone who is a mother. And it was really interesting to get her perspective on all of this because I obviously do not have children. I count my dog as a child, but in this instance, I will not count that. But like, I found her character to be so unlikable because I never felt that she believed her son. And I don't like, I know that was like the struggle that we're dealing with here in this whole series, but I just, that made her character so unlikable to me. And I don't know if that made my experience with the dynamic between her and Chris Evans' character like that much less believable, or if it was truly just because she was miscast.
Well, is it like, well, spoiler alert, is it something because when they took that test of the like murder gene or whatever, and like it comes from
she had a lot of plausible reasons to not believe her son. And I do think we're trying really hard to not spoil things to the extent that we're going to tell you everything that happens.
Well, I mean, I think both parents at some point didn't believe him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're torn about whether he did it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, because Chris Evans' character went out of his way to like try to not have it be. So there was definitely some.
But I would argue that like the entire premise of the show really is asking the audience, what do you think? Right. And you have reasons to believe that he did and reasons to believe that he didn't. And you spend the entire series.
He fucking did it.
He did it.
And I don't dislike the mom. I was like completely because I felt like the entire time that this kid did it. And I was glad that she wasn't in this like fantasy land that her kid is so innocent. I think she knew, she ignored signs in his past.
I agree.
And I think that weighs so heavy on her that it's like, had she reacted differently and responded to those signs that I think she did notice, would they be in a different situation? So I felt like that was her conflict the entire time, and that was the guilt that she had to live with the entire time. So to me, I felt like I liked that it wasn't this like blinded support believing your son. It's like realistically, did you raise a monster, and what does that feel like going through it on that side of things?
Yeah. And like, listen, I think you guys both joked that he did it, but the thing that we, I guess we'll kind of have to spoil in this is that the question really is not definitively answered, right? There's a lot that happens in the penultimate episode, the second to last episode, where you think that it's a very clean sweep, but then the final episode kind of like turns everything that you believed on its head and says, just kidding. Fuck you. Here's a different perspective.
Just kidding. Fuck you. He did do it.
or maybe he didn't though. Like, I don't know. There's something really interesting about, I wonder if they had been given even more time to tell the story. Like, I don't know if this like 8-episode thing was enough for me, because I feel like the intention was obviously to leave you questioning. And despite the evidence for and the evidence against, and even though one kind of felt stronger than the other, I still don't feel like I left with any answers. And that annoyed the fuck out of me, but I also fucking loved it about it.
Yeah.
I love that it wasn't giving us a clear answer.
Totally.
And that we're kind of left to have our own opinions about what really happened.
And so about each character, right? Like, you're left with like your opinion about each of them, because the mom does fucked up things. The dad does fucked up things. Maybe the son did fucked up things. Like, it's just such a clusterfuck. And it's like, it's a situation that you could totally see yourself in if you were any of the three characters. Right. And so I don't know. I loved this show. And I like you guys, I love Chris Evans. I think the Apple TV Plus, like the production design on their shows is just so fucking fantastic. And I know they spend like millions of dollars per episode, but you can tell, and it's just so well done. It's compelling. I found this show intriguing. It was suspenseful. I'm not usually a big murder mystery guy, but there was something about this that I was just so riveted by. And I couldn't get over the notion that like every single episode I left questioning my own self and how I would handle these situations. But more importantly, what the fuck happened? Like, you know, cause there just isn't any clarity. And I don't know, there was something like torturously cool about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're all in agreement on this one. That's a great show.
Cool. Any other thoughts, Natalie?
I mean, I really loved the show. I definitely feel like he did it. Like, there's just way too much evidence, like, pointing to him, like, and not enough pointing to anybody else.
I mean, that internet site that he was on and doing that, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that he wrote.
Yeah. Well, so I was felt very strongly that it was him once they talked about the internet site that he was on. And then once that, spoiler alert, that, you know, story he wrote came out, I was like, oh, for fucking sure this kid did it. For sure. And I also feel like, again, spoiler alert, I feel like Chris Evans, the dad, knew that he did it because he got rid of the knife. Right. If he really felt like his son was innocent, he'd be like, okay, we need to test this knife and clear him of his innocence, you know, clear him of this and make sure that, like, yeah, there's no blood on here. There's nothing that could tie this knife to that incident.
Yeah.
And I feel like his first reaction was to get rid of it.
But I think that not to belabor the point, because we should probably move on to a new show, but from my perspective, what that was asking was, it wasn't so much that he thought that he did it. It was that
Your child?
Correct. And what lengths would you go to protect your child? And that's the question that the entire series was asking. And even as someone, again, that doesn't have children, I found myself incredibly drawn to and being able to relate to what these two parents were going through, because I don't know. I think you would go to great lengths for your child, you know, even if you thought that they had killed someone.
I mean, it's hard. Obviously, like, we're not in that situation. I think there's one thing to, like, love and support your kid, but to, like, cover up a crime that they committed, it's like, no, you need to, like, fess up and do your time, and, you know, justice needs to be served. You can't get away with killing somebody because you just fucking wanted to, you know. It just, to me, that's not a, how is this person going to grow up to be an adult and not murder somebody again if you let that happen? And then now that murder is on you.
Well, and that's what both of the parents are dealing with toward the end, right? It's the gravity of what, I mean, that final episode is really dealing with the question that you just posed. It's what if he really did do it? And how do I let this person out into the world? And the consequences of those feelings. And it's so much. And the acting was phenomenal. I think the writing was phenomenal. I loved everything about the show. I wish that it wasn't just a limited series, although I understand that it needs to be. All right. Okay. What's next, ladies?
What's next?
I'll do a quick little snippet on this one, since it's a short limited series and I don't think either of you saw this.
Oh.
It's Unorthodox on Netflix, and it's a German-American drama miniseries that debuted on Netflix on March 26th. The first Netflix series to be primarily in Yiddish, and it's loosely based on Deborah Feldman's 2012 autobiography, Unorthodox: The Scandalous Rejection of My Hasidic Roots. So it follows Etsy. I don't know if I'm saying her name right. I think it's like the site, like the crafting site you could buy off of Etsy. A 19-year-old Jewish woman is living unhappily in an arranged marriage among an ultra-Orthodox community in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York. She runs away to Berlin, where her estranged mother lives, and tries to navigate a secular life, discovering life outside of her community and rejecting all of the beliefs she grew up with. Her husband, who learns she's pregnant, travels to Berlin with his cousin by order of their rabbi to try and find her. So it's definitely showing...
Oh my God, are you still reading this?
No! So to me, it's like, was such an interesting look into a world I had zero knowledge about. And as much, yes, a lot of it is in Yiddish and a lot of it is subtitled. So I think it's 4 total episodes. So the first 2 episodes are really heavy in the Yiddish. And then once you get to Berlin, you're hearing a lot more English and it's a lot less subtitles. But it's just such a fascinating, like, look into this world. Sean, do you have any desire to watch the show or?
I mean, not particularly. I just don't, the genre and what you're describing doesn't particularly resonate with me, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, one of the most, like, beautifully shot shows I've seen in a long time. There was so much attention to detail and they had, I think one of the directors on it was a Hasidic Jew in that community. So he brought a lot of realism and that culture and accuracy to all of that. It was, and they have like a 20-minute behind the scenes of making of the show on YouTube. Oh, that's cool. That is also like, that's almost just as fascinating as the show. So, I mean, to me,
how many episodes is it?
There's only four.
Oh, okay.
So it's a real quick, like one evening.
4 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're an hour each. And it just, it gave me a lot of feelings and like empathy towards both sides of this argument, where it's like, you see this young girl in this arranged marriage and she's so unhappy and this isn't the life she feels comfortable living. And I don't think she has a full understanding of why she's supposed to be in that relationship. And so she's kind of running away from this, and you know, her husband's trying to bring her back. And it's the fact that it's like, you think that these people are the bad guys, but then you understand why they're living this life and seeing their relationship. It was heartbreaking for both sides of it. It was very, very well done.
So as you know, I did just get a brand new TV, and the fact that you just said that it was beautifully shot, is it in 4K?
Oh, I don't know that question. I don't have a 4K television.
Actually makes me want to maybe watch it. I mean, if you're recommending it this highly and it's only four episodes and it is beautiful cinematography, I mean, right now for me, that trumps a lot of other things just because, you know, I'm trying to like get the most out of my new experience. And so,
yeah, maybe I'll check it out. To me, like it's fun to kind of dive into a completely different world. And that is something in this that I feel like I haven't been to Berlin. I'm not familiar with that community in Brooklyn. I think it's really, really such a fascinating look at it. And again, like I said, it's both sides of the story that it's telling, which I think is really, really great. So it's got a lot of meaning to it, a lot of depth, a lot of emotion, and it's well done.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Fine. He sold me. I'll check it out. Awesome. Lena, do you have a pick?
Sure. I think I watched something that you guys didn't watch. So I'll talk about my Lock and Key on Netflix.
The first episode.
You did?
I did. I liked it. I mean, obviously, it's your pick.
It gets so good.
Does it really? Okay.
Yeah. I really liked it. I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I didn't have anything to do the next day. So I was like, I'll watch it. I'll keep watching it because I started it. And then I was like, I think I watched like six in a row. Like I was like, I loved it.
I mean, part of what I will say about this whole like, you know, quarantine lockdown thing that we've all been under, I am not typically a TV person. Like it's very challenging for me to, people recommend things to me all the time. And the idea of committing to like 10 to 12 episodes of something is just, it's a little overwhelming to me most times. And so I just typically don't,
that you can binge.
Well, yeah.
A lot.
And being in this quarantine over these last several months, I have literally watched more television than I think I've ever watched in my life, obviously. And I've enjoyed so much content. And I think that's part of the reason why I didn't follow through with that show is because I was distracted by something else that was great. Yeah. So I would totally go back to that.
Yeah. Well, Lock and Key is a supernatural horror drama.
Drummer.
We just finished Jersey Shore. So.
Yeah, I got a little Jersey in me right now. A supernatural horror drama television series developed by Carlton Cuse, Meredith Averill, and Aaron L. Chiliotti. It's based on a comic book series of the same name by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. It premiered on Netflix in February 2020, and the series stars Darby Stanchfield, Connor Jessup, who's so cute, Emilia Jones, and Jackson Robert Scott, who we all know from It. He plays little Georgie.
Right.
It was announced in March that they'll get a second season, so I'm excited for that. I really liked it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Supernatural and like horror, and it really is its name, Lock and Key. So there's like all these magical keys, and when you put them in certain doors, they unlock certain like mysteries, and how these children like use them to like discover things about their father. Because there's a whole bunch of things. This house has been passed down in their family. And then all the keys have been separated because they all do kind of certain things. And so there's like a group of kids that grew up, but they were like protecting the keys. But then the father died and the family moved back there and the kids started finding the keys and then discovering a bunch of different stuff. So it's just super interesting. All the worlds that you go into. It's really, I really enjoyed it.
It felt very like Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe to me. I don't know why that's like the first thing that came to mind when I started it. But
Narnia?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably is nothing like that. It's more of a mystery.
It's not as fantastical as that, I would say.
I kind of digression for a second, but I just watched, I'm not a Disney person at all, but I was really compelled to watch Artemis Fowl. I don't know if you guys watched it.
I wanted to see that.
It's so good. In fact, I'm recommending that we commit to a future episode right now, because I think I want to talk about Artemis Fowl. I want to talk about The King of Staten Island, and I want to talk about Shirley, all of which are on demand right now. And I think you saw Shirley at Sundance, didn't you?
Yeah.
Where did you see it, Natalie?
At the Sundance Film Festival.
Anyway, those are three ideas that I have for a future episode. I think it'd kind of be fun to talk about those three movies. So think about it. Maybe we'll do it.
I don't even think I've heard. What is this Artemis Fowl? What is that?
It's the big Disney movie that was supposed to be in theaters, I think, over
is
like
an animated movie.
No, it's very
it's a very like young supernatural like comic superhero-ish type kind thing.
You know what's funny?
Am I dumb? What is this title?
It's
is it about chickens?
No. It stars what's his name? Colin Farrell.
Artistic chickens.
One Colin Farrell. No, I would equate it closer to Harry Potter, which I know is your favorite, Natalie.
God.
It's a really well done. It's a Disney film, obviously. But I really enjoyed it, and I challenge you to watch it. And I think
I'm gonna watch it. Pass. I did want to watch that the other. I was almost gonna put it on the other day.
Yeah, I was
hard pass.
I liked it like exponentially more than I thought I would. Like I thought I was gonna. I went into it thinking like this looks intriguing and the trailer looked interesting. I ended up loving it. It was very entertaining. Cinematography was fantastic. Production value. Everything was just like 10 out of 10. Really good. Anyway. Going back to Lock and Key. Did you have any other thoughts on this one?
No, I'm really excited for the second season. I really like, and again, the same thing I've been saying all of this year is the damn kids out there. They're so talented. Like they're just so cute. And I love them all.
Cool.
Great show.
Well, I'm excited to hear that. So as you know, there is a show that has been, God, I think it's been like at least a year in the making, and I've been so excited because it's based on one of my favorite movies of all time. And it was, I think it was supposed to come out earlier than this, but with all the stuff that happened, they kind of pushed it back and finally came out this week. And it was supposed to come out on Friday, and then they ended up moving it up a couple days. And so it came out on Tuesday night, and I literally stayed up till 2 a.m, binging every single episode of the first season of the show. And it was such a magical, amazing experience for me. I loved it so much. And the show is called Love, Victor. It's on Hulu. And it is a dramatic television
series. Victor Justice?
Love, Victor Justice. It's actually funny because I've convinced Victor Justice to watch this. And he's gonna watch it for me.
Okay.
Because he enjoyed the movie too. But anyway, it's a TV series created by Isaac Apteker and Elizabeth Berger. It was inspired by and set in the same world as the 2018 film Love, Simon. And it is now on Hulu. It was produced by 20th Century Fox. And Apteker and Berger serve as the showrunners of the show. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, I loved it. It felt like a 5-hour variation of the film, which couldn't have been any better for me.
So is it like the same as the film? Like
no
the premise, like this, how the story goes.
So it's set at the same high school.
I love the movie.
I know. And all I will say is that if you love the movie, you're going to love the show, because I actually don't want to spoil anything for people that might be interested in watching this, because if you've seen the movie, there's so many throwbacks to the movie that I'm not even going to like go into. I just want you to be surprised by them. Some of the feedback around the film that I tended to agree with, although I have mixed feelings, because as a gay kid growing up, I didn't have any content like this to watch. And so I think that's why this particular story resonates with me so much. But the film was like this idealistic version of like what coming out at that age could have been like for some of us. However, the feedback that came from the film was that most of us did not have that experience coming out. It wasn't this whimsical, romantical, you know, experience. And the people that wrote the show, I believe, are the same people that wrote the film. So not the book that it was originally based on, but it's the same screenwriters. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is I saw an interview with them where they said they actually heard the feedback from the movie. And so they made Victor's story, who basically is like a new kid at the same high school. his family just moved into town, and his story is not quite as, you know, romantic and fantastical as Simon's character was, right? And so he has a struggle with his sexuality, and the people in his life aren't quite as accepting as Simon's were. And so that part of it was much more interesting to watch, I think, over the span of, it's 10 episodes, but it's really like less than 5 hours because they're half hour each. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you get through it relatively quickly, but it's such great character development. It's such great writing. It's got so much heart. I think I cried like once every episode. There's Carly Rae Jepsen references, which, as you know, I literally loved everything about the show. And if you have any interest in watching it at all, I just highly encourage you to, because especially if you have kids, it was supposed to originally be on Disney Plus and it moved to Hulu because it's a little bit more adult content. But I think if you have older kids, it's worth like sitting down and watching it with them, because again, it talks about the things that we're talking about in our society right now, outside of sexuality, right? Things like tolerance, things like acceptance. And it's just, I don't know. It touches my heart so much to know that, you know, as somebody that had a hard time with my sexuality growing up, that content like this exists for kids, you know, right now, because you might be struggling with something at home, but you can watch this show and escape and see that like, it's all going to be okay. And I don't know. There's just something so amazing about that to me. And so I just, again, I'm so excited that this show exists, and I just really recommend watching it.
That's lovely.
I know. I'm excited to watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Check it out. All right. What's up next?
I'll do a quick little one. Lena kind of dabbled in this show a little bit. Sean, I don't know if you saw it at all, but our very good friend worked on this show, so we wanted to give it our support.
Hey, I watched all the episodes.
Did you watch all of them? Did you finish it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It was Mrs. America. It's FX on Hulu. So it's an American drama television miniseries created by Dobbie Waller about the political movement to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. So it feels very timely right now to kind of revisit what steps have been taken in our history and both sides of the argument. So it stars Cate Blanchett, who plays this woman, Phyllis Schlafly, who is this very strict conservative Republican, but was actually a feminist. And so she was fighting this argument against the Equal Rights Amendment.
I love that.
While she was actually a feminist and kind of like never really understood that it's like, you aren't like home with your kids because you want a career and you're out on the road and you're writing books and you're doing all of this amazing stuff. Like, why don't you realize that you are a feminist? Everything you're fighting for is to like keep women at home, but you're like not at home in the kitchen, you know? So it was a very interesting look at it. So Cate Blanchett, who did a fucking amazing job.
Yeah, she's great.
Rose Byrne, Uzo Adubo, Elizabeth Banks, Margot Martindale, John Slattery, Tracy Ullman, and Sarah Paulson. So,
oh, that's the cast.
Ari right Greener. There.
Oh my God. It was, oh my God. Ari was so fucking good. What's James Marsden? There's just so many people, a few episodes here or there. But Cate Blanchett, for sure, this will be on Emmy lists everywhere. All of the performances were spectacular. And then I will be completely honest, it's a slow burn. It's a very methodical drama. And there's certain episodes that I was obsessed with. Other episodes are a little bit slower. So it kind of follows one of the women during these times, kind of focuses on them while still kind of like in that episode, kind of continuing on the timeline of the story as they're trying to pass the ERA. So it's a really, really, I feel like, important show to watch. I think if you want a little bit of a history lesson on what that time was like, and I think it's really, really interesting to see. So I highly recommend it.
Wow. It's honestly like it's in my queue.
I think
Hulu.
You would love it, Sean.
I think you would love it.
Yeah. It's been
in
my queue.
It's all politics. It's great.
The cast, I didn't realize, I knew that Cate Blanchett was in it, whom I love, but I had no idea that the rest of the cast was quite that extravagant. I mean, those, you listed like literally so many people that I love.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's, I'm going to check
there's
it out.
There's a moment in the fifth episode that is like one of my favorite things I've seen on television in a really long time, and cemented my feelings towards Ari Greener in a really big way. She just killed it. And then the last episode was just so perfect and powerful to what the whole show was talking about. It was great. It was really, really good. And so it's been fun to kind of watch that and support our friend who worked on it. And, you know, I think it's, I, again, don't go into it expecting some like action packed, super like moving, like fast, you know, show. It's not, it's definitely a slow burn. So just be prepared for that.
You but know, I think that's the kind of slow burn that Sean would like.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's right up my alley. You know what I love about this moment kind of like in pop culture, and I know this has kind of been a trajectory for a while where just television has just become like exponentially better than, you know, it ever was in like, you know, the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. But, and I think we probably have like HBO to thank for that, because I think they really stepped out on kind of the forefront to make television, you know, a much more cinematic experience. But I have had such, and that's why I'm so glad that we're doing these episodes, is because I have had such a great experience with television as of late. Like, there's just been so many great shows that have had such a significant impact on me in ways that film has. And quite frankly, in ways that film has not recently. I haven't, you know, there hasn't been a lot of film recently that I've been like, you know, enamored by or thought that it was making a significant impact. But there's been a lot of television shows that have. And so I'm really excited to kind of dive into a show like this, because I think that when you can take the time to tell the story over, you know, more than 2 hours, I think that you can tell a more impactful story in a lot of cases. And so,
yeah, this significantly needed more than a 2-hour movie, for sure.
Yeah.
And so I love the fact that it's a limited series. It's not something that it's like teasing me into a second season. I just know I'm getting to learn this part of history, these particular people, for that 8 hours or whatever it may be. And so, and definitely the quality of the show is so good. And the two directors that I think did the majority of the episodes directed Captain Marvel. So it's like you kind of have a certain cachet in acting, production design, all of that. It's just really good. And it, again, like I said, it will be Golden Globes, Oscars, Emmys, all of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. By the way, did you guys hear that the Oscars were moved to April?
Yes.
That's pretty crazy.
It is wild.
I don't know what we're going to have to talk about for Oscars next year. But...
I know. I mean, all of those movies are released at the end of the year anyways, I would think some were maybe in production, or how are they handling post? I don't know. I don't understand.
Yeah. I feel like post has got to be a little bit easier because you've at least got the stuff filmed. I mean, I've seen like, I saw a really interesting, I think it was an interview with Anna Kendrick a couple of weeks ago where she was talking about how like she literally did like the ADR for Love Life, like in her living room. And she was kind of talking about like what that process was like working with someone remotely and kind of like, you know, it's possible, I think, to do post-production right now. So hopefully if people had stuff filmed, but if you didn't, or you were in the midst of it, that sucks.
Yeah.
All right, Lena, do you have another pick?
I guess the next one I'll talk about, is, Never Have I Ever on Netflix.
Oh, you and your teen dramas.
This is so cute. Did you even watch this?
I have not, no.
Oh my God. It's so cute. Oh my God. I love it. So it's literally one of my favorite things. And I think we pretty much watched all of it at once. Like, I loved it. It's a coming of age comedy drama series starring, I'm not going to be able to say her name. Sorry. was created by Mindy
Riai Ramakrishnan.
Ramakrishnan. And it was created by Mindy Kaling and Lang Fisher. The comedy is partially based on Kaling's real childhood story, growing up in the Boston area, premiered April 2020, and is about an Indian American high school student dealing with the death of her father. And it is just, okay, first of all, the actress, I can't say your name, unfortunately. It's horrible. But, like, she was so good. She's so cute. Like, she had so much, like, character and personality. Like, I hope they get another season. She was so good.
So,
like,
fantastic.
Her comedy, like, everything about her was just fantastic.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very, if you're a fan of Mindy Kaling, it's definitely her voice, her tone, her style. If you're not a fan, then you're probably not going to like this show. But this is the type of content we need to be having out there. And this is the type of content that needs to be made, that's showing different people on diversity. Television. Mm-hmm. It's made by, you know, diverse voices, because I feel like the more we see things, the more children see things, because this is a young adult show, mm-hmm. that it's like we should be building generations of accepting people. And I think, again, like Love, Simon, it's like that movie should, I mean, I wish we would have had this movie made years ago, so yeah. kids had something to like look towards and feel comforted and I feel mean, like they're not alone.
You had what?
But it's just like the movie Threesome.
A friend today, it's funny because I was talking about specifically about Love, Victor. He started to watch it, and I was like, I had nothing like this growing up. And he's like, you had Will and Grace. And I was like, what are you talking, in Queer as Folk? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, that was not accurate representation of like the experience. And I'm sure there's some gay people out there that would fight me on, particularly on Queer as Folk, but mm-hmm. I'm just like, no, this,
I love that show.
This is not that, but yeah, but we love that show for very different reasons.
But I think such a mainstream show, and this, yes. again, in the same way as like P.S. I Love You, where it's like showing like normal like stories that are like these romantic comedies, and like everybody can relate to this. Like totally. You don't have to have a white, skinny, yeah. blonde girl as the lead. It just like you should be able to show every single person that you normally see in life anyways.
And the family dynamic that they have, like a family. It was just great.
Yeah. I feel like
then being able to dive into the culture of that family too was just so amazing.
Yeah. And that's also happening on Love, Victor, which is interesting. And I think the thing that differs that a show like that from a show like Queer as Folk is like, you're not going to sit down and watch, I hope not at least, watch Queer as Folk with your family.
No,
like, it's not going to elicit a discussion, whereas shows like the one that you guys are talking about and like Love, Victor, I think that those are, you could sit down and watch them together and actually like, you know, incite conversation.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do like, so cute. There was like so many different versions of families that were portrayed on this show that I think were so great to see, that it's like, you do see like very loving families, very loving parents. And then you see parents that are like, so work oriented and kind of just like absent parents and leaving their kid to do whatever they want. You're seeing her struggle with the death of her dad and her relationship now with just her mom. It's just, it was really, really fascinating. And then a mom that had left, and then because she wanted to be an actress. And so it's like, you are kind of seeing all of these different lives. It was really well done.
So good. Yeah.
Like I think it's going to have a second season, right?
I hope so. I mean, so many people talk about this show. It's like, I loved it so much. It's one of my favorite shows watching.
And as much as like, she's so boy crazed that she's, such a teenager, but that's all her mind is wrapped around. And you could see that she's losing focus on schooling and her friendships and all of this stuff, because she's just so determined to get a boyfriend or make it look like she has a boyfriend. And it was interesting to kind of like see all of her other friendships and how they develop. But I was like, kind of don't really want to hear about this boy anymore. I kind of want to see where these other friendships are at, these other storylines, and where those characters go. Like, that became more interesting to me about 5 episodes in, where I was like, I'm kind of like, I don't care about the surface level shit of boys anymore. I do want to know more about how these other girls are doing.
That's cool. I'll check it out. It's one of those things, I definitely have seen the press for it. And I saw like, you know, I'm pretty sure they were advertising it like prior to like the pandemic, because I remember seeing the billboards and stuff all over like Sunset. I'll check it out. It sounds like a cool show.
I think you'll fall in love with the girl. She's just so amazing. I love her.
Cool. I'm going to watch it. All right. So my last show that I'm going to talk about today is a show that I'm actually sneaking at the last minute. It wasn't originally something I intended to talk about in this episode, but I have been so obsessed with the show. I think I've even been texting you guys about the show for the last week, because I discovered it during a promo of Love Life when I was watching like one of the finales. They aired a promo afterward. And I love the lead actress in this show. And so because she's from Arrested Development, and I had no idea that the show existed prior to this. Apparently it came out in 2017. And I'm going to give you a little bit of the backstory and the synopsis, because it actually has kind of an interesting journey. So the show is called Search Party, and it's a black comedy television series created by Sarah Violet Bliss, Charles Rogers and Michael Showalter, who we can talk in a second about how we know Michael Showalter, because we do know him from something else. It's primarily set in New York City, and it follows a group of self-absorbed friends who become involved in the search for a missing young woman and the events that result from their involvement. And what I think is most interesting about the show is that it first premiered on TBS, which I don't think I've ever watched a show on TBS, in 2017. But when it was renewed for its third season, it was moved to HBO Max. And I think that the show stylistically fits very well. It could be an HBO show. And so that's part of the reason that I've enjoyed it so much. I have almost finished the first two seasons, which again, if you know me, like, I don't binge television shows, but I'm so obsessed with this show. It's so good. The third season actually starts this coming week. So the week that this show will air, the week that this episode that we're recording right now will air, the show will be in its third season on HBO Max. And I can't say enough good things about this show. It's obscure. It's funny. It's fun. It's suspenseful. The soundtrack is amazing. I think that probably the thing that I find most intriguing about this show is every single episode, these characters get painted more and more into this impossible corner. And if you, I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but like sometimes they'll just like, they'll write a character into this corner where it's like, how are they ever going to get out of this situation? And every single character is written that way in the show, but somehow they manage to like make it back for another episode and they're extending it to the next season. And it's, I don't know, like it's just, it's a really, really good show.
And Michael writes it or he's directing it or he's in it?
He's a creator. And I think that he may also be, he's a producer and he may have actually directed a couple of the episodes, but
yeah, probably.
It stars, and I think I'm going to say her name right, but it's Aaliyah Shawkat, who played Maybe in Arrested Development. I don't know if you guys watched Arrested Development.
Yeah. And she's very good friends with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she is. They were
quarantining
together. In real life, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's so interesting.
That's such an interesting dynamic.
They like go to galleries together and stuff like that. It's just, they have a very interesting friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That's cool. But yeah.
I like her. She's cool.
She's really cool. And she's one of those actresses that like, I always think about because I used to really be passionate about pursuing an acting career. And I always kind of felt that like, there just weren't roles for me, which I know is like a white guy that might sound ridiculous to say that, but I never felt like my quote unquote type, like fit in anywhere in television and film. And I look at someone like her and her career. And I feel like the same could likely be said about her because I would never like think that there's probably a writer that's like writing a role specifically for someone like her, but somehow she takes all of these roles that she's done throughout her career that I've seen her in at least, and just done a phenomenal job. And she's a really good actor, and she's funny, and she's believable, and she's, you know, has the dramatic flair. I cannot encourage you guys enough to watch the show. It's very good. It's funny. It's suspenseful. It's dark. It's really good. You guys need to check it out.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm hoping that you saw what?
I saw it pop up on HBO Max. We're like, oh, that's what Sean was talking about. So
yeah, I think they're starting to promote it.
Eventually click it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're starting to promote it because third season is like exclusive to HBO Max. And so I think that that's like going to be one of their, you know, main shows. I'm really hoping that next up is a show that I'm wanting to all talk about together. So Natalie, don't let me down.
I think there's something we want to mention that we both liked on Hulu.
Yes, I definitely think we should talk about that next.
There's two shows that are on Hulu that I think we all want to talk about.
Two shows. Oh, two. Interesting.
I mean, both the shows that I'm thinking that it could possibly be on Hulu.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'll start about one unless you want to talk about it, Lena.
No, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Okay. Normal People is an Irish drama television series produced by Element Pictures for Hulu and BBC Three in association with Screened Ireland. It's based on the novel of the same name by Sally Rooney, and the series follows the relationship between Marianne and Connell as they navigate adulthood from their final days in secondary school. Oh, that sounds... it's so different than high school.
It's so European.
To their undergraduate years in Trinity College. The series was primarily written by Rooney and Alice Birch and directed by Lenny Abrahamson. That's too much. And Henny McDonald.
I read this book 1 year ago when I went to South Africa.
Oh my God. Oh,
a year ago.
Okay. Wow. So I'm going to, I apologize, but I have to interject for a second.
Okay.
Because before you start talking about it, I just want to say something and then I'm going to let you guys go because I don't know as much about this show as you do, but I have a specific thing that happened to me about the, around the show.
Oh,
so did I started, feelings? There were, yeah, there are crazy feelings. So I watched the first episode, I don't know, maybe like a month ago, whenever this came out, bored to tears. Like I was like, oh my God, this is awful. I have no interest in the show. It looks stupid, whatever. Okay. For some reason, the universe was like, Sean, you need to give this another chance. So last night, I
fell asleep. The universe or us?
No, the universe. Because so last night, I fell asleep watching Love, Victor again because I'm just, you know, it's kind of my thing right now. And so I woke up and probably 6 o'clock this morning, Love, Victor had ended. And for some reason, Hulu decided that it wanted to just keep showing me content. And it started with episode 2. of this show, and I wake up and it's literally these just like two hot people fucking, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, did I fall asleep to porn? Like, what is going on? and then I'm like captivated and riveted by the show, and now I need to fucking watch the rest of it because
yay,
it's so good.
Episode two, so good. Episode two was so good. Like, sex aside, it was really good.
I will say, like, this show came highly recommended by friends. And as we were watching the first episode, I turned to Lena and I was like, I hope to God this gets better because I can't do this.
Thank you.
Even if it's as little episodes as it was. I think it's what, like 6 episodes or something like that. So it's very short. And I was like, I just can't. I don't have the patience for this, to do this. Like, I really, and it's, I don't know if it was like hot off of Unorthodox, which was like a really kind of like slow burn, and in Yiddish, and it was just like, I just can't do,
not again.
Yeah,
I'm like, I just, you know, and I'm like, yes, he's hot, but it's just not, it's not doing it for me. And then I think by like the second episode, I was like, I think when they kissed at the end of the first episode, I was like, okay, I kind of want to see what happens with these guys. So and I was thinking, do I care to sit with these people the entire time to see where their story goes? Like, I don't know if I do. And then you just become just connected with them. And the most realistic, sexy time I've seen on like television, like ever, like it was just kind of crazy. Like, we all were joking about like the sounds and we were just like, oh, my God.
I'm just sitting here thinking, Natalie, I hope you don't call it sexy time in real life. I hope you
don't. She does. No, I don't. I don't. I call it bangs. Anyway. So it just, to me, it's like you do see that there's this connection and you get frustrated with them along the way. And we won't spoil anything for you, Sean, but it just, it's like, it is a really captivating show where it's just like you're constantly like, what the fuck is going to happen next? Like,
yeah,
you know you're still on the journey, so you know there's still more to see, but it kind of feels like, okay, is this it? Is this where it ends? But like, I know there's two more episodes, so I know I'm gonna like be with them a little bit more, you know.
Yeah. I guess I need to go back and rewatch the first episode that I never finished because
I don't think you need to.
Oh, really? Okay. Because it was such...
I don't know.
It was so slow.
Because that's when they meet, and then you learn how they... I don't know. Maybe not.
I saw them meet, though. I saw them meet.
And well, if you remember that, then I think that's it.
Okay. I think it's fine. I think it's just kind of building up who she was at the school.
Because I like how they, like, ignored each other and, like, that whole, like, school thing, you know, where it's, like, click and click and...
I feel like high school is at least 2 episodes that they're kind of like, you see the dynamic of it. I think that's just really build up to that first kiss happening. And I think if you already saw them fucking, like, that build up is, it's over. Yeah. Like, you know where it goes. So
I literally woke up to them fucking. And to be quite candid with you, I wish that the first episode would have just started with them fucking because it would have been a much more compelling experience for me. And I would have probably been more engaged.
I think it's really quite fascinating how they told the story of like what her life was in secondary school and what his life was in secondary school, and then seeing how you could be the same person but taken so differently when you're moving to college or to another school. So it's like your experiences don't necessarily translate, and it's kind of fun for people, maybe if you didn't have a good high school experience, that it's like, look, you get to look forward to potentially college where maybe you're finally understood or you find your people, or, you know, I think it was, that was really, I loved how they did that.
Cool. I believe you. I'll watch the rest of it.
It was a little role reversal, so.
That's cool.
It was good. Yeah.
Next on my list of stuff to binge is going to be The Politician season 2. I think that comes out tonight.
Oh.
But after that, I will watch this.
Okay. Yeah. I highly recommend it. Don't watch it with parents or anything like that if anybody's listening.
I've been alone for like 7 years now, so I'm going to be watching it alone. It's fine.
I know. I feel like my mom asked me about it. I was like, I mean, you should watch it, but I don't really want to talk to you about it.
Ever. Never.
Yeah, I think you did tell her that.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, Lena, last one for this episode. Make it a good one.
No, we've got a couple more to cover. We'll go quick.
Okay.
Well, I think that the one you want to talk about possibly is Space Force.
We already talked about that, I thought, didn't we?
We did?
No, we didn't.
Oh, I thought we talked about
that. No, I don't think so.
No, we didn't talk about it.
We talked mostly about Hollywood
Upload.
And Upload.
Oh, that's right. We didn't get to a lot last episode.
No, that's what I'm saying. We got a lot of ground to cover in this.
I feel like we're going to have to make this a three-parter because this is a long
episode. No, we're powering through. We'll be real quick.
Yeah, we'll be super fast.
All right.
Space Force, don't watch it.
All right, next one. Next up.
We talked about Space Force because Greg Daniels was Upload. So gotcha. Both shows. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
Honestly, yeah. We were excited to see Space Force. It is a pass.
I was actually excited to watch the show, and I'm not a fan.
Yeah. I say don't waste your time. John Malkovich is interesting because he's always interesting, but I don't think it was worth the show. Mm-mm. So, Sean, do you have different feelings?
Not really. I think, obviously, just to expand on that, it was way much slower paced than I was hoping for. I won't spoil it beyond this, but I think what they did with Lisa Kudrow's character was like so disappointing to me very early on. And it's funny because I read a review where someone had said that and I thought, oh, she dies. And like, no, she doesn't die. They don't use her character appropriately.
No, such a waste.
A waste. Cause I love
her. You don't
her.
Even know what the fuck she did to get into jail.
Totally. Well, spoiler. And then you just, I think my
we
biggest.
Just told people not to watch it.
We so don't, no one's watching this show.
The jig is up.
Yeah. It's just, I thought it was going to be funnier. I thought it was going to be, I kind of wanted them to do like a cinema verite office style. And I think I said that about Upload 2 with Steve Carell on a TV show like that. I need that, like, you know, the camera pans like on a close up and you see his reaction. I don't know. That's just what I wanted here. I think, I don't know what else. I don't have a lot of notes on this one. I think I enjoyed the scenes with like the Congress and like that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez
character. That is one
character.
Thing. I liked when they were all together in that room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or as my grandma likes to call her, Casio. That's what my grandma calls her. Anyway, and the handmaids walked in. That part was funny to me. That was probably the funniest part of the whole show, though. Skip
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Pass. Next up.
Quickly, we'll talk about Dave on Hulu. It was premiered on FXX on March 4th, and it was co-created by rapper comedian Little Dicky, who plays the main character. It was renewed for a second season, which I'm really excited about. And it follows the fictionalized version of Little Dicky. He's a suburban neurotic man in his late 20s who's convinced himself that he's destined to be one of the best rappers of all time. And so he's trying to convince his close friends because he needs their help. And it's just kind of a very interesting show. Several people had told me to watch the show. And so the first episode, I highly recommend to anybody, if you're not into it by the end of the episode, then don't bother. I think to me, the way that show ends the first episode, you're totally sold. And I don't want to get too detailed into it, but it just, you feel a little bit embarrassed for this person until you see the end of the show. And it's I was like completely sold and I was really excited about it. And it talks about a lot of crazy shit and it shows a lot of crazy shit. And there's one particular episode where it talks about, it was my favorite episode of this series was talking about his hype man, Gata, who is, that's who plays, he plays himself kind of. And he talks about being bipolar and his mental illness and how he's a bipolar, like depressed hype man, which is so interesting for him to be. So you kind of see him in his like high highs and his really low lows, and like how his backstory, they go into it. It's really, really fucking fascinating. And I just love that there's was an entire episode dedicated to this side character about his mental issues, not at all about Dave or Little Dickie, the main character. Like, it was completely dedicated to him. It was great. I loved it.
This is not a show for Sean.
Yeah, you lost me about an hour ago. So
really?
This show was torture to watch.
There
are some parts of it that's like, okay, fine, maybe that was funny, but I don't like anybody. I can't get in none of it.
Yeah. He's a very Larry David asshole type of character. There's not a ton of redeeming qualities about him. It's kind of
I think that's supposed to be what's cute about him, but it's just not to me. Like, I don't find it. I just don't.
It's definitely more for a male audience. I think there's a lot of dick and fart and, you know, jokes in it.
Dick and fart jokes. He's just so like, ugh,
to me. I would say that the opposite is true about Search Party in the sense that they're all equally unlikable, but characters, but there's something so endearing about them that you love them still. And I need that. Like, I need to care about them in order to be invested.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I mean, I think give it a try. At least watch the first episode. If you're not sold after the end of the first episode, then I think, and want to know where this guy goes, then I think the show's not for you. But
I've heard good things.
I really like it. It's, to me, it's kind of replaced, which sucks because I love him so much. But like, Louis C.K. was always this like disgusting man who like talked about really important topics in really terrible ways, and now he's just a terrible person, and that's hard for me to like still understand. So I feel like this is my replacement for that. So it's, I like this, I like the topics.
That's a positive review.
I know that's not a great review. I like the topics he's covering in the show.
It is
wrapped up in this kind of like
rap
ridiculous crazy shit and fart jokes type of guy, you know.
Okay. I was gonna say, I really hope you weren't a Chris D'Elia fan, because you're in for another world of disappointment.
Yeah, we were.
Chris D'Elia fan.
Were you really?
I was a major Chris D'Elia fan, not him as a person. I kind of always thought he really is a douchebag.
He was like so disgustingly flirtatious with my friend, and I was like, I could have called this a mile away. He's gross.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, you could tell. We used to go to the comedy store all the time. He'd be around. He's just like the way he walks. He's just such a, like, he's just a dick. Like, I liked his comedy, but like him
I
as didn't. A person.
I never thought like it was funny. And his voice is annoying as fuck. No. Oh my God. Oh God. His voice is so annoying. I'm sorry. Anyway.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
He's canceled.
All right. Next up. Is this our last one?
Let's just run through shows. Two? Huh? Yeah, go ahead.
Dead to Me season 2?
Yeah, Dead to Me season 2.
Didn't watch it.
Did you watch season 1?
I watched part of season 1. Oh, I love Christine Applegate. I just couldn't get into it.
Oh my God. And
what?
I don't know what it is, but Linda Cardellini is like my new favorite person in the whole wide world. I think she's so damn great. And she was in Grandma's Boy years and years ago. And I was like, this lady, I don't get anything about her. And in this, I'm like, especially season 2, I love her. I think she's so fantastic, and they're just great together.
The show's
James Marsden, man. Whew.
There's a lot of things in the show, production value wise, that really bother me, but you just let it go and you enjoy the ride. And
what does that mean?
They drive a lot. And how they shoot their driving scenes and the video on the screen that they're showing of like what the street is supposed to be looks fucking terrible.
It's set in Laguna, right?
Yeah, it's set in Laguna. Yeah. So there's some things like that where it's just like, oh God, you guys like really didn't spend any money on visual effects for this thing. And they spend so much time in the house, but it's like you don't care because these two women are so fun to watch. And then James Marsden comes in and it just like, so great. He's so fucking great in the show. In
he's both great. Yeah, I do like him a lot.
Oh my God. I love the twist on the second season with him. It's just great.
It's really good. So highly, highly recommend.
Oh God, another show I have to watch.
Yep.
Like, no, and you have to watch one more. You have to watch What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh my God.
So you guys were talking about this. I think
this is my favorite fucking show.
You guys were talking about this a while back, weren't you?
We talked about the fact that we had just seen the movie for the first time and then got into, because season, is this season two, I think?
Two.
It's Taika Waititi, right?
Yes.
So we had just, it was in our Jojo Rabbit episode. I think you guys talked about it.
Well,
no,
I don't think so.
No, because
we hadn't seen it. Yeah. The movie, yeah, no, we just watched the movie during quarantine.
Oh, it's a movie and a TV show.
So it's a movie from like 2017.
No,
2014. It's like older.
Yeah.
But we love Taika, and we're like, how come we haven't watched this movie yet? Because everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe you haven't watched this movie. And we watch, I'm obsessed with the movie. Now the movie is a whole different like level than the show for me. The show is really good though. Like the first season, I'm like, oh, I wish it was Taika and Jermaine and all of them. But like by the end of it, like I'm falling in love with these characters.
Yeah.
And Guillermo is literally the best person in the whole wide world. But like, it's just a like mockumentary about vampires. It's just, they're just ridiculous. And it's just, it's such a fun world. I love vampires. And especially if these were vampires in real life, I would be their familiar because I love them. They're just, yeah. I want to be around them. They're so fun.
I was thinking in the last episode we watched, I was like, I wish this was a real job. I would totally consider it.
That's my job. I'm a personal assistant. I would be a vampire's personal assistant. It would be so great.
It's just, it's really fun. I fucking love the movie. I really can't get enough of it. I just think Taika, his style of comedy is just really tickles me in a good way.
It really tickles me too.
And the show, it took me a little bit to grow into it because I watched the movie right before we watched the show. So it's like I got really attached to those three actors and those three characters. And this is the same style, but instead of taking place in New Zealand, it takes place in... Not Staten Island. Long Island?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Sound like one of the places in New York. So it's just, you're with new people. And so I've really gotten attached to them. And I just think that they're really funny.
Actually, it says New York City. Anyway.
Well, they're on one of those boroughs.
It doesn't matter. It's hysterical.
Yeah. It's also on my list of things to check out. It's kind of like
at the bottom. You definitely should.
You have my movies. You should watch the movie. It is hysterical.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Spent a night going through all of the like behind the scenes stuff on the movie because it was originally a short film. So it's like seeing the stuff they did in the short film into the feature. It was like I just really did a deep dive.
We got obsessed.
Yeah.
And then in one of the episodes of the first season of What We Do in the Shadows, they throw back to a lot of like vampires from like a lot of different movies and shows, and it is great.
Yeah,
like True Blood, like all kinds of shows like are in there, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. And then I want to say a couple things very quickly about a couple of shows.
We
binged Killing Eve because I had never seen any of it. Season three is what's out or just finished right now. Season one and two are great. Season three is pretty garbage. So if you haven't watched the show yet, I still recommend it for the first two seasons.
Season one is phenomenal.
I can't see season three getting any awards or any love that way. Yeah. Ozark season three was out on Netflix. That was phenomenal. So, so good. That show's always been good. It's always delivered. And this last season was almost even better than the first two. So it's definitely highly recommend if you're looking for something to binge. And then this is definitely way deep into binging is Better Call Saul. But this last season that was just aired on AMC really started getting into Breaking Bad quality level storytelling.
After seven seasons, it's finally there.
There was a lot of like storytelling. It's always been really good, but like there was a few episodes that I'm like, I haven't seen television this good since Breaking Bad. So it's like some of the episodes this season were unfucking believable. And when you go on to like IMDb, it's got ratings and stuff for each of the shows. These are like 9.8, 9.7 rated shows, which is like really, that doesn't happen often. So, but yeah, that was it.
That's it.
Sean, that's did it. You watch The Great?
I did watch The Great. Well, I'm not done with it yet, but yeah, I'm halfway through.
Okay. I have not watched that. What do you think?
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about that.
Oh, well, let's talk about it. I don't think we have
watched it. Well, it's on our list. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. So I think I love Elle Fanning and I like Nicholas Hoult. I think for me, the show, so basically it's a show about the, it's a miniseries that's loosely based on the rise of Catherine the Great, the Empress of Russia. I love Elle Fanning. I love Nicholas Hoult. I loved The Favorite, which is kind of like the universe that this feels like it's set in. Again, I'm about halfway through it. I liked it. It definitely has the same aesthetic as The Favorite, which I obviously loved. It feels a little bit darker, I would say, than probably the movie. It's good. It's if you want like more of, again, to kind of like live in that world again, but with different characters, it's the show for you. It does feel a little bit slow to me, so I've kind of taken my time to get through it because it's, you know, you got to pace yourself. But it's good. I like it.
Are they speaking in Russian at all, or is it just Russian accents?
No, I don't even think it's Russian accents.
Really? It's an English accent.
Yeah.
In Russia?
It feels like The Favorite. Again, these could have been like secondary characters in The Favorite, and you could have edited them into the film, and it would have been believable, at least from my perspective. In fact, Nicholas Hoult was in The Favorite, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in The Favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this could have been. Yeah. Go
ahead. I'm confused. It says the Empress or Emperor of Russia. So are they not in Russia? Am I a dumb?
I cannot speak intelligently enough to history to put this in historical context for you. I would say that you should just watch the fucking show and suspend your disbelief, as I like to say.
If I don't like period stuff, am I?
It's not comedy. It's a comedy.
It's period. Not a show about Vladimir Putin, if that's what you're thinking. no, it's again, it's set in the same universe as The Favorite. So it's the same type of comedy. It's the same. It's a little bit darker, but it's the same type of stuff that's happening around them. I feel like it's shot on the same set in the same castle that The Favorite was shot in. Like it's literally The Favorite, the TV show, with different characters.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
That's definitely on my list to watch. I do like Nicholas Hoult a lot.
I would say you have to suffer through the first episode.
Like period pieces.
I don't like period pieces either, but I love the movie. And so that's what
intrigued me. I love the movie, but I feel like the level of actors in it were like, they're going to fucking deliver, you know?
Well, I mean, it definitely doesn't have like Emma Stone or, you know,
Rachel Weisz
or Elizabeth Coleman
or Olivia Coleman.
But Nicholas Hoult is equally funny as he was in The Favorite. And then I actually think that I always want to call her Ella Enchanted. Elle Fanning is good. I mean, she's a great actor. So it's worth watching. If you have any interest in it, I would say watch the first three episodes. I don't think the first episode is like as compelling. In fact, it's a little darker than the rest of it.
Are they hour or half hour?
They're hour.
Oof, that's a lot of time.
I know. This episode has been a lot of time. So we want to thank you for getting through the whole thing.
We covered hours and hours and hours of content.
In an hour.
Yeah. No, it's been like three.
Like an hour and a half, but still. You know, that's fine. But I think we did a lot of legwork where it's like somebody could have dedicated whatever 6 hours of Space Force now they don't have to.
We did it for you. Don't do it.
Yeah.
It's true. We did. As always, we want to thank you for listening. For more information, please be sure to visit themartiniscale.com, where you can find links for all of our social channels in addition to show notes and more.
If you haven't already, please head over to Apple Podcast and rate and review us. It helps others discover the show.
We'll see you next time.
Cheers.
Bye.